to propose or not to propose? That's the question for Bachelor and Waukesha native Nick Vile. In today's Behind the Headlines, we'll hear from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel resident experts on all things related to The Bachelor. We'll also hear from business reporter Rick Rimmel on how companies are using social media influencers to reach younger audiences. I'm your host, Katie O'Connell. Thanks so much for listening. Investigative reporter Jacob Carpenter has been tracking the deaths at the Milwaukee County Jail. Outside investigators have been looking into those deaths. Now, criminal charges may be filed pertaining to one of them. Jacob joined editor Greg Borowski during this week's JS on Politics show to discuss the latest developments in this story.
We're joined now by Jacob Carpenter, who's one of our investigative reporters in the newsroom, and he's been tracking the deaths at the Milwaukee County Jail. So, Jacob, you had a very interesting story, an important one that posted in yesterday about how there may be some criminal charges afoot in this case, or at least the first indication of what these outside investigators may be looking at.
Yeah, we did. It was part of a motion that was filed the other day in court related to the inquest in the Terrell Thomas dehydration case. And in there, they do say that a potential relevant charge that they would be looking at would be abuse of an inmate. And that is a felony. It is the lowest classification of felony, punishable by up to 3.5 years in prison. But it is the first time that we've seen an indication of who could be charged. Although we don't have names, we do know that it would be jail staff, and what that potential charge that they could be looking at would
be. Right, and the way they would be defining abuse here isn't, say, striking a person. This is like withholding water or
the title of the charge is abuse, but it also would include neglect or, I believe, it ill treatment of an inmate.
Okay. And let's talk a little bit more on this issue about a story you've got going that's posting this morning and available in print tomorrow on a survey you did of all the deaths in all the county jails across the state and how those sheriffs have handled those cases. What did you find?
Well, we wondered, with Sheriff Clark in this case, his administration did get an outside investigation into one death at his jail, but not in three other deaths. So we wondered what's typical. And we found that in about 60% of jail deaths that we looked at all across the state over the last 5 years, we found that 60% of them did have an outside investigation, usually with that outside agency coming in right away. A few times with the local agency doing their own investigation and then asking for a secondary review by an outside agency.
All right, so it shows that here, at least in Milwaukee County, we might be a little bit out of step, but there isn't a lot of uniformity.
No, there is not uniformity for sure. And it's a decision that under state law is strictly up to sheriffs. So there is kind of an all-over-the-map element to this.
Yeah, well, let's lastly talk about, a few years ago, a law came through for people who die in the custody of police officers, so outside of the county jails and other places, and that requires an outside investigation to take place as a mandatory situation. Is there any move afoot to do something similar for deaths once they're in custody in a jail?
Well, the Milwaukee County supervisors, definitely, they've already voted that they want a state law on that front. I did talk to Senator Chris Larson, who's a Democrat from Milwaukee, who said that he's in the early process of looking at and drafting a bill. Nothing has been introduced, and he didn't really have a sense at this point as to whether there'd be an appetite for that, particularly in a Republican legislature. But there is at least some talk of it at this point.
All right. Well, great. Well, thank you very much for that update and for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Jacob will continue to cover any developments in this story. To find his past coverage, visit jsonline.com. Monday night is the big one for Bachelor Nick Vile. The Waukesha native has narrowed it down from 30 women to 2. There's Vanessa, a special education teacher from Montreal, and Raven, a boutique owner from Hoxie, Arkansas. Reporters and Bachelor lovers Allison Sherwood and Sarah Hauer have been watching, tweeting, and writing about Nick's journey to love. Here are their thoughts on the upcoming episode, including whether or not Nick will ask the big question.
So how do you think Nick represented Wisconsin on this season?
I thought he represented Wisconsin well. They kind of, it's funny because he's sometimes portrayed as being from Chicago. Sometimes now he's like living in LA, so he's totally gone the opposite direction, pursuing his like fame, Hollywood, whatever dreams. I don't know. He doesn't talk a lot about Wisconsin. He threw a Packers reference in there, his allegiance to the Packers. He brought up, I think, in the first episode
when he was talking to Rachel.
And they weren't supposed to bring the girls to Wisconsin for a week of dates, but because of some weather circumstances with Hurricane Matthew, they did end up doing an episode that was filmed in Wisconsin. And so that was kind of, I thought that was fun, seeing all the sites around Waukesha, Milwaukee, Oshkosh area. And it felt really personal for him, and he seemed to be really fond of his hometown and fond of all the memories and the
especially
places.
Especially remembering places he hooked up with girls.
Yeah, there's a lot of places in Waukesha where he's hooked up with girls in high school.
Going into the finale, we have Raven and Vanessa. What are our predictions?
It seems very obvious to me that Vanessa and Nick see a future together, or like have more of a connection that will work in the real world. He and Raven, they seem to have fun, like good chemistry, kind of, but you just can't see it happening outside of Bachelorland.
Yeah, I don't see him picking Raven. I definitely see him picking Vanessa. What's tough is that there's only so little that we see, so that what we've seen, especially as of late between him and Vanessa, so we got their first date where they went on the spaceship thing and she vomited and he still kissed her and it was adorable and they seemed very playful and fun together. But especially in the last few episodes, we have been seeing more of just tough conversations. How are we going to make this work?
Yeah.
And so I think as a viewer, that makes it kind of tough because then you forget about that connection that they have because you're only seeing them not really argue, but having...
Yeah. Well, they do... It does make you... The things that they bring up are, like, legitimate concerns about how are we going to make this work? I live in Canada. You live in L.A. Or, you know, she has a steady career and family there. And he's, like, you know, going on Dancing with the Stars and who knows what's in his future. So it seems logistically tougher for them. And personality-wise, they both talk about how they're stubborn and they could see themselves having conflict in their relationship. But they seem to be talking about these things because they're, like, wanting it to work and could see a future together.
That's what I've been thinking. It's also just tough because he could be having these conversations with Raven, and we're just not seeing it.
Yeah, and he could be
having always so tough.
More romantic moments with Vanessa that they're not showing. Prediction would be more along that line, that they're trying to steer us thinking that things are going better with Raven, just to throw us off the scent of Vanessa.
Yeah. So do you think Nick will propose? When he was talking to the first bachelorette to break his heart, Andy Dorfman, a couple episodes ago, he said, you know, I'm not going to get engaged to someone just because I'm the bachelor.
I think he's totally going to propose. I mean, he's been through so much on this show. To not propose at the end of all this would be so unsatisfying, first of all. And second of all, it almost everybody does propose, even if they're like, I don't know if this is going to work. But you get a free, like, 3.5-carat diamond ring out of it, so you might as well do it. I think he'll propose.
Allison and I have been tracking our quote of the night every episode.
Yes.
And so we've had 10 episodes so far, and of those 10 quotes, 8 of them are either from Corinne or about Corinne.
And I feel like if she had lasted till the end, then they probably all would have been.
They probably
about
all
her.
Would have been.
She just was, she was like a true queen of one-liners. She said, I mean, she's funny, you have to admit. One of my favorites was actually from Taylor, who is Corinne's kind of arch enemy in episode 5. Their relationship will be built off of whipped cream and lies. That's Taylor talking about Corinne and Nick.
One of my favorites was when Corinne said, "I'd live in a shack with no diamonds for Nick. Who am I?"
That one, I remember, like, stopping and being like, did I just hear that right?
Yeah.
With no diamonds. Oh, what a sacrifice.
What a sacrifice.
That's Corinne's not privileged life. She claims mm-hmm. that she's not in any way, shape, or form privileged.
But Corinne was ultimately kind of had a redeeming moment at the very end after she was sent home when she kind of had her meltdown, and then she decided that I'm done trying to impress these men. I'm ready to be me. So hopefully that works out for Corinne.
Hopefully we see her. I'm sure we'll see her on Bachelor in Paradise, and we'll see if she actually does. Mm-hmm. I feel like she's been herself all along. She's been pretty confident.
I think so, too.
Being herself.
We'll find out which of the final two women Nick picks, Raven or Vanessa, on Monday night with the season finale. It starts at 7 p.m. You can follow Allison and myself on Twitter and read our recaps on jsonline.com.
We'll have full coverage of the final episode Monday night. You can follow Allison and Sarah on Twitter as the episode airs. You'll find Allison on Twitter at Ali Sherwood. That's AliSherwood. Sarah tweets at Sarah Hauer, SarahHauer. And look out at tapmilwaukee.com for their recap after the episode. Imagine getting paid to wear a certain type of shoe, but you're not a model, not truly. You're getting paid because you're a social media influencer. Business reporter Rick Rommel sits down with editor Jim Nelson to break down this latest trend in marketing.
Hi, I'm Jim Nelson of the Journal Sentinel. I'm here with business writer Rick Rommel.
Hey, Jim.
How you doing, Rick?
Pretty good. You?
I'm fine. Nice shirt you got on there.
Thanks. I try to be stylish when I'm writing about fashion.
And, you know, you've influenced me by wearing that kind of a shirt. I might go get one myself. But, Rick, your story is about a different kind of way that people make a connection through fashion and connections between people and companies that are selling clothes and so forth. What is this?
Right. There's a wave of marketing going on that's on the rise called influencer marketing. And it uses social media, things like Facebook and especially Instagram, to promote products through the recommendations and visuals put up by people who have significant, say, Instagram followings. And there are a couple folks, there are probably quite a number, but I know of two people in Milwaukee who are doing this. One is Drew Westfall. He has about 53,000 Instagram followers. And Pamela Keek, who has about 23,000 Instagram followers. And in both cases, both Drew and Pam are getting regular shipments of free merchandise, some of it quite pricey. You know, a $600 watch, a $250 jacket, $150 pair of jeans, simply because they have these followings. They post photographs of themselves wearing their fashions on their Instagram accounts. The photos are quite, you know, quite nicely done, very professional. Mm-hmm. Pam, in fact, uses a professional photographer. Drew takes his own photos, but he's become quite good at it. And besides getting this free merchandise, very often they're getting paid by the companies for promoting these brands as well.
And from the companies end, be it a watchmaker or a jeans seller, it seems to me that there's a real advantage for them because they're reaching through these individuals' followings. They're reaching a customer base that's really engaged already.
Sure. It's very targeted marketing, and it's very appealing to companies that want to reach millennials and young adults specifically. You're reaching them on the way they're using media now. They're looking at their smartphones. They're following these Instagram accounts of people who post photos and short articles about things that the followers are interested in. Say, Red Wing boots. Drew Westfall is a big fan of Red Wing boots. So are a lot of other people. So a lot of them are following him. And when they see his post photographing him in some new style from Red Wing, that's going to get attention.
It's almost the whole world of advertising as traditionally conducted, where you blast out ads for a mass audience. It's sort of like that turned upside down. It's like the inverse of that almost.
Exactly. And there's a company in Milwaukee, a startup called Lumanu. They're very small. They have, I don't know, half a dozen employees or so. Co-founded by a guy, very interesting, Tony Tran. He is he was born in Vietnam. His parents, I believe his father fought for the South Vietnamese Army. They came here to the United States when Tony was two or three or something like that. He grows up in South Carolina, smart guy, goes to MIT, graduates in computer science from MIT, works at a couple of other places, and then gets this idea for a company that would marry, basically connect brands with so-called micro-influencers who are aligned with the aesthetic, the interest of the brand. Mm-hmm. And Tony has some sophisticated algorithms that he uses to search the posts of probably millions of Instagram accounts to find influencers who will connect with a given brand.
So he helps. He's almost like a broker.
He is a
broker
between
the companies and these individuals like Drew and Pamela.
Exactly. Neither one works for Lumanu, but it's the same basic idea. And Lumanu specifically looks for what are called micro influencers, people with say 5,000 to 50,000 Instagram followers. That sounds like a lot. Kim Kardashian, just by way of comparison, has, I think, 93 million followers.
Wow.
If you want Kim Kardashian to post something, take a photo of her in one of your pairs of slacks or something and post it on Instagram, you're probably going to be paying six figures for it.
Wow. So in the case of the two people you interviewed, Drew and Pamela, is this their jobs? Or is this something they sort of do as part of their everyday lives?
Both of them have day jobs, basically. Pam is a store manager, and Drew works at a sort of a hip menswear store in the Third Ward. But in both cases, the income that they're getting from their influencer work is significant. Drew said he got about $15,000 last year from this work. Pam didn't want to say, but she makes about $100, say an average of $100 per Instagram post, and maybe $500 for a photographs and article that she would put on her fashion blog. And plus, they're getting all this free stuff.
I mean,
Pam Keek said for the last 6 months, she's been getting deliveries every day.
And what do you think is next in this kind of marketing, this kind of finding influencers or making that bridge between?
Well, it's definitely going to grow, at least for a while, because other people are going to realize that this is something, hey, I could do this too. I can, you know.
Especially after they read your story.
Well, to the extent that they do. But you know, smartphones now can take such great photos. You probably don't. Drew uses a Nikon on a tripod, but you probably don't need that. You can probably get away with doing this with your smartphone, and you have an interest in fashion or other things that can be that a brand might want to see posted on Instagram, I think people are going to do it. And in fact, Drew said he is seeing more and more that will inevitably there's going to be a point where it starts to recede too, at least for some people.
Right. Well, we'll look forward to your story. And again, nice shirt.
Thanks, Jim. You're looking pretty good yourself.
Thanks, man.
That story already appeared in print in the Journal Sentinel. If you're curious about it, you can find it on jsonline.com/business. That's it for today's show. Once again, I'm your host, Katie O'Connell. If you like this podcast and you haven't done so yet, please subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. It's the best way to make sure you're getting the latest news from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Join me next week for more.